Okay. Welcome to this thing that is about to happen. If you want to turn your cameras on, please do. Even if you don't want to turn your cameras on, please do. The primary purpose of this event, as far as well, because I may be the last to know, but as far as I'm aware, is to meet some new people. And what happens here is going to depend on you as much as me. There was a sort of half 50-50 feedback in terms of interactive versus non-interactive. There was couple of people who are definitely against it, but not sure if they're here. Certainly one of them isn't. And then there was a couple who are very for it, and one of those isn't here either. So it's still 50-50. I'm guessing it will be both. I'm still waiting for the cameras to come on. I think because Adam made a last minute sign up. We have a very blurry camera there, Adam. We did hit the magic number of 10, if you include me, which I do, although in terms of my the percentage I was gonna calculate, it doesn't quite work, but I have 1,000 followers on my blog and 10 showed up. Well, 9. So that's 1 in 100, that's 1%. The one you are the 1%. Anyway, make of that what you will. That could be me complaining. It could be me commending you on being the elixir that was extracted from that faceless, voiceless mass, my supposed followers. This event was conceived, contrived even to some degree intentionally as a way to lure some of you in who hadn't been lured before by the hopefully not entirely false promise of some intellectual content, because I'm aware that, well, I have a track record of books and things that have attracted people who do like intellectual content. So I say contrive is a little bit of a ruse, because in the sense that it was an intentional strategy just to see if some people would show up who don't normally show up, which does seem to have worked. Still can't see two of you. We have two Daniels here today. Often have recurring names, different spellings, so that makes it easier. Daniel and Daniel. So I was going to start. I actually took some notes today, which I never do, precisely for this reason, is that some of you might be expecting intellectual content, and I'd like to be able to deliver. What I would guess is happening is I'll talk for a while, probably less than half an hour, but you never know. I might start channeling something really good, and then I'll just keep going, and then we'll see about some sort of interaction. And place I had in mind to start was with the human energy field and what it is. And the reason, besides the obvious that it's obviously a big central subject, is that, I mean, I never actually know, and I want to be careful to remember that I don't know what I was going to say on these events. I can take notes, but if I slavishly adhere to them, we will all suffer horribly, believe me. And we don't want that. We already have enough suffering, I think, in our lives, which is part of the theme of today. Why do we suffer? Big question. Buddha said it was desire. That's actually not in my notes, so I guess I don't agree with Buddha. Anyway, was I saying? The human energy field. Yeah, I don't know what I'm going to say because I don't know who's going to be here until you're here. I might start tuning in or connecting to you beforehand, and hopefully some of the thoughts or images that come up is a result of being receptive to that, to you and your my connection to you. But it doesn't really begin until it begins. This is why it's helpful if the cameras come on, because I've just got a name and a blank screen, and it's much harder to tune in to the other vegetables in the pot. But I was looking for the human energy field analogy. What's a human energy field made up of? Well, that's a good question. So I'll leave it blank. But what I want to say is that this here is a human energy field. Now, there's a larger human energy field, which is what has been known as humanity. And there are rumors that there are 8 or 9 billion of those fuckers. Pardon my French. Just going to invite John to turn his video on, see if that works. That officially that's humanity, is billions and billions of them. Now, I'm pretty sure, I'm pretty confident that, like me, you haven't met even a billion of them, even, you know, a small fraction of them. I don't know if you think about how many people have you met, how many souls have you met. There he is. Good to meet you, John. Good to see you. Yeah, I mean, it's pointless to perhaps to guess. Okay, I would guess for myself it's a few thousand. Well, I mean, I guess if you include all kinds of interactions in shops and bars and cinemas and things, then maybe it's even a few tens of thousands. But anyway, it's certainly, wow, that was dramatic. That's my fireplace. It's not in the hundreds of thousands or the millions, and certainly not in the billions. So we don't really have to think about all of those people as far as that may be what the human energy field is made of, or it may not. We don't really know how many real humans there are out there. So get your paranoid, more paranoid than you already are, but that's my own perspective. I don't know if the earth is round or flat, and I don't know if there are 8 billion humans out there. That's just what I've been told. So right here, there's 10 of us. So that's the human energy field that we're in, or that we're aware of being in currently. And what I had in mind as a starting point, anyway, although of course I've already started, but it's a preamble to the official starting point, was to get a sense of what it is to be in a human energy field, because I can't really testify. Well, of course I can, and I am testifying, but I mean, part of my understanding here, which is more intellectual than not, is that we're inside of something, and there isn't really anything outside of us. We're not really in a world of objects. We're not really in a world of people, because that's to do with the social identities. And we're not really separate from each other. So I was thinking, well, how could we, because I assume if you're here, you're probably not fully enlightened, and you're probably not fully cognizant of this possible reality that we're not separate and that we're inside of a larger field of consciousness. So I was thinking, well, how could we do something that would at least allow us to think about this a bit more easily? And what I had in mind was our organs, our internal organs, because really that the most of us as human beings is on the inside, really. And we've got this skin and hair and stuff and nails, and we spend a lot of time grooming and looking at that part of ourselves. But it's pretty superficial, literally, even if you don't introduce vanity and plastic surgery and the rest of it. Relative to the, you know, 99% of us is on the inside. So I wanted to invite everyone who showed up here, which is a little bit less than I imagined or hoped, but usually is a bit less, to imagine that you can tune into your internal organs. Maybe you don't have to imagine, but maybe I just say tune into them. But you know, you've been told anyway, you've got a heart, you've got lungs, you've got a liver, you've got kidneys, you've got a few more. I'm not really a biologist, but anyway, you've got a bunch of internal organs. And you probably don't tune into them very often, but you rely on them to live. Without them, you would be screwed. So imagine that you can tune into your internal organs, and what you discover is that your internal organs are actually like receiver transmitters. Are you smudging there, Adam? Hopefully not smoking crack. And that they, one of their natural functions is to receive and transmit information from and to other organs, because they're, well, they're like us. They look for their kindred. And they want to exchange stories and chat and gossip. So what's going on with you and over in your end of the universe? So if you can imagine this, then what you would imagine also, what you would see is that all of our internal organs are communicating right now. Right, my heart is beaming out signals to Jeff M's heart, and his liver is beaming out to Ronald's liver, and Ronald's kidneys are signaling to David Bender's kidneys, and so on. This could be happening. And the reason I bring it up, although I think in and of itself it's a quite an interesting thought experiment, is that if this is going on, then we're not as separate as we think we are. If our internal organs are connected to one another and in communication, then it doesn't really matter. It doesn't really, it's very almost irrelevant, the fact that we've got this external view, looking at the outside and looking in the mirror and checking our hair, and oh, I'm an object in a world of other objects. I'm obviously not inseparable from Jeff or Ronald or Eileen. Clearly, I'm an independent agent doing my own thing. That would become relatively trivial and even irrelevant if the entirety of our inner viscera is connected. So that's my opening working thesis of the human energy field and what it might, one of the ways we might understand it and even start to experience it. And fortunately for me, it does correlate with the official theme, which is back to the blood. Like if our awareness is in our blood, our primary awareness is in our blood, and our blood cells, along with our organs, are in communication with one another, then we're swimming in a shared sea of primal awareness. And something went wrong. Something went wrong with primal awareness. Primary awareness became secondary awareness, and paradise became planet Earth 2021. Not right away, obviously, but we know that it took quite a while to get as bad as it is today. And it did start out, well, we don't know that it started out perfect, but we've got myths and stories, and it's feasible. Let's just say it's feasible that we at least had a day of human perfection, even if there are only two of us. And so I was thinking about this, and I was thinking about, okay, so what I was thinking also, one of my approaches is to look at the really big picture and then look at the really small picture and then bookend them, and then we can kind of fill in the rest with our imagination. So the really small picture is going to be very easy for everyone. Good days and bad days, you have them. You know the feeling of everything is just right. And you definitely know the feeling of nothing is going right. Just everything is heavy and hard, and oh, I don't even want to have to talk about it, actually. As compared to the lightness, and it can be the smallest thing. Yesterday, I was trying to find a place to print some things and I couldn't. And I thought, well, I'll just get some nice cat food for my cat from the vet, because I happened to be driving by. I'm in Galicia, so there aren't many shops or towns or anything. And then while I was there, I asked the vet, do you know any way to print? Because I was sure there was nowhere in that small town. She said, oh, the restaurant next door. I went there and they printed it. And I had, it was such a trivial thing, but I had a feeling of that, I just slipped into a groove there. I didn't have to do anything. I was just responding instinctively and impulsively, spontaneously. I'll get some nice, healthy food for my cat. And then the next thing you know, I found a place to print without looking for it. That, you know, when we have days like that, wouldn't it be nice to have years like that? Wouldn't it be wonderful to have a whole life like that? Wouldn't it be utterly amazing if the whole of humanity or human experience was just that? Forever and ever, amen. Anyway, it isn't. But that's the small picture, as in we know good yesterdays and no days, we know what it feels like to just feel out of sync with everything. And we also know the opposite of that. And that's, well, the feeling of just wrongness anyway is when something went wrong, there's something in our blood, like an irritant, that just prevents us from relaxing and responding spontaneously and naturally to existence, breathing properly, speaking properly, walking properly, standing properly, sleeping, did I say that one already, dreaming, eating, the essentials of living are all so simple and natural. The birds and the bees know them, even mosquitoes and ticks know how to do this shit. But human beings don't. So we know in our blood that something has gone wrong because it's so hard to have that experience of just rightness 24/7. And we're constantly reminded of a discontent. The big picture then is, when did it go wrong and how did it go wrong? And so then for that, we have to go back to the Garden of Eden and Adam and Eve, or I do. But if you're more of a kind of Advaita, non-dualist, Buddhist, spiritualist thinker, go back to the manifestation. In the beginning was the sword. I was in my notes. But that's not Eastern, that's Christian. It's a play on the Christian thing. In the beginning was separation. Without separation, there'd be no existence. Because if you have oneness, how can oneness know itself? In relation to what? Oneness is zero. Oneness is, well, anyway, let's not linger on oneness because it's too hard to think about. But if you accept that proposition that oneness can't know itself because it's got no reflection, it's got no, there's no, to know, one has to know something. There has to be an object, subject-object relations. Anyway, what I'm saying, this is a premise. We can question it, of course, question everything. But as that premise, then two-ness was necessary for existence to happen. And the original duality was man and woman, Adam and Eve. We could say day and night, yin and yang and so on, but we're human beings, let's keep it just simple. Man and woman living together in perfect harmony. Now, according to Steiner, they did have sex and they probably shat as well. They probably ate and shat. But according to Steiner, they were in such a spiritual state that they were sleeping when they had sex effectively. And they were sleeping when they shat and ate, that they weren't cognizant of those bodily functions in the initial period. This is just Steiner, but just as kind of a bit of interstitial tissue there. In terms of what exactly happened with the fall. So it wasn't necessarily that Adam and Eve, you know, got tempted by the serpent and said, oh, look, I've got this thing and you've got that thing, let's put them together. It was more to do with an awareness entering in that became self-awareness, which became self-consciousness, which became shame. And this is when the secondary separation happened. Through the interjection of the serpent, which we'll get to. And the secondary, not the secondary separation, did I say that? The secondary duality or polarity was not man and woman, but good and evil. So we had man and woman, Adam and Eve, and then we had the serpent came somehow. The third thing, okay, the serpent is the knowledge. The man and the woman is the knower and the known, subject and object. They're both subjects to themselves and objects to the other. Right? But subjects and object know each other and know that it is good. But the serpent interjects somehow with knowledge, which is the third thing, which where the separation begins. And somehow that's a traumatic thing. And so then the set and the knowledges of good and evil. It's not man and woman or day and night or two positives. It's a positive and a negative. And then, of course, Cain and Abel, which is the good and evil embodied, because one is good and one's not so good. And the not so good one feels really bad about not being as good as the good one, and so he kills him. So what occurred to me today anyway was that, and this also to bring it, the middle between the little picture of good days and bad days that we all know and the big picture of what happened in the beginning of creation, there's the personal big picture is what happened to you as a baby when you're originally separated from your mother, your birth experience, birth trauma, and those first couple of years. And so keep that in mind. Like you have your own experience of being in the Garden of Eden and being cast out. You don't have to tap into the Akashic records. It did happen. Maybe before you were born, even in the womb, but at some point. At some point, so what I could conceive the serpent entering in, which is the pathogen in the blood, the irritant in the blood, has to do with the experience of separation that resists the experience of separation, or an inner resistance to separation. So we have to presume some sort of traumatic element that it was overwhelmed. But what, however, or why ever it happened, a part of the human energy field couldn't bear the experience of separation, even though it was good. Me man, you woman. Wow, there's all kinds of good things could happen. But there was a loss. There was still a loss. And it was this period where man and woman were two, but they were one. And even though they were having sex, maybe, and they were eating things and shitting, and so they were in a world of objects, they weren't aware of it because they're, well, I don't know exactly how or why, but they weren't. But when they became aware of it, then there was resistance to it. And the resistance is embodied by the Satan, Lucifer, serpent image character in the story. And as I can see, it relates to the intellect in some way and to dissociation and disembodiment. But the resistance to separation intensified the separation. And in order to reduce the pain of separation, what that part of us did was separate further away, unnaturally far away, so that it wouldn't even be aware of the other. And therefore would not experience separation from it. So it was a kind of negation of the other, which is where you get Cain killing Abel. Cain actually wants to kill, to wipe out the existence of the other because it's a torment to him. But you can see how if you're separate and you somehow manage to annihilate your sense of any connection to the other, then you don't feel the pain of the separation either. And then what happens is you isolate yourself and you quarantine yourself in this illusory realm in which you are the only one there is. It's ironic, isn't it? It's like you're trying to get back to the original oneness. It's Lucifer trying to reign in hell. But the only way you can get back to it, because it's not in the divine plan, is you fabricate a traumatized memory simulation of it. And it's violence because it means negating the existence of the other, and it means cutting off from life itself. Anyway, so that's my condensed theory of what happened. Hopefully it's a little bit original, a little bit coherent, but not too original that it's incomprehensible. And so yeah, this don't know what you would call this now, because it wasn't just an event. There was a natural splitting apart, just as in birth, and then there was a somewhat natural but somewhat unnatural reaction to it, a resistance to it, and then there was a thoroughly unnatural strategy that was pursued, and then we entered into, over time, into an unnatural state of being in relationship with our bodies and with existence. So yeah, so that's been rippling since the original trauma. Original sin was the Christian thing, isn't missing the mark, disconnect, the original disconnect. And of course it repeats, as just as history repeats itself in a number of ways, I mean in countless ways, but most relevant to us, it repeats in our individual lives through our birth experiences and our relationship with mother, the mother's body, the Garden of Eden. We get cast out, we rebel, etc. And then of course it repeats and recurs in our lives on a daily basis. This splinter in our brains, that this wound that never heals. So, I'm tempted to say I don't know what the solution is, but I think that we all know what the solution is. Excellent. But it's not gonna be easy to put into words, or even probably not even sensible to try and put it into words. I'm going to pull down one of my notes. I haven't been referring to them, fortunately, but they're in my mind, because I think it's related to that thread that I just didn't quite stitch up, which is, if we're all interconnected, and essentially we are all one, we come from an original oneness that divided into two-ness to know itself, and that was good before things went wrong, and that we can journey of zero distance with effortless ease return to the original oneness, which is the two-ness, two in one, yin and yang, man and woman, love and happiness, then yeah, who are we as individuals? So in my notes I had, what's the difference between identity and individuality? Because this has come up on a couple of events. And well, it just seems like a kind of, it seems like a crucial element, a piece in the puzzle. Because the thing that went wrong relates to the ego and the sense of a separate self. And so there's a tendency, and it's there in lots of teachings, to want to reject it completely, the thing that went wrong, to assume that it went wrong so early on that it must just have been bad from the start, bad blood. So just cast it out, cast out the demon, bad serpent, bad ego. And this would be a mistake, because then we'd have to start all over again. So the difference, as I could perceived it, and this, of course, this is just language, but we are using language, between identity and individuality is a key one, because identity is to do with identification. And you could say, I got a nod there from the gallery. You could say that, and I don't know what I'm going to say now here, so hopefully it is worth saying, that, oh, now I've derailed myself, that Well, back there in the garden, there was something going on there, yeah, that an identification began that was a step too far from just becoming aware of being an individual. But there was something so disconcerting about becoming aware of being an individual and the process that was beginning there. As I said, there was a tendency to double down and pull away or try and accelerate the process of separation and go too far into separateness. And that was done, I think, I'm guessing, and intuiting now through a process of identification. So I'm not sure about Adam and Eve, but you've got the fig leaf. They identified with being naked and they got ashamed. You can see how that's self-consciousness, that's related to identity. Cain and Abel, they were identifying, being good and being bad, and then Cain, he got the mark and everything. So identity has to do with being fixed as this one thing, and that just can't be. You just can't be an embodiment, an incarnation of the divine, of the everything, if you're going to identify as just one thing. Whereas individuality then is what can't be divided. So the difference, I'm fudging this a little bit because it's a bit new to me, but the difference in simple terms between identity and individuality, they're opposites really. Identity is a fragment, and we identify with a fragment and say, this is who I am. And this is how I'll stay safe from further trauma and a sense of isolation and separateness by just completely separating and just saying, this is all I am, this little fragment. Individuality is what can't be divided. So that's when all the parts come together and we are whole. And each individual is a whole, somewhat paradoxically, fragment of the divine. So yeah, there is this fundamental paradox in terms of experiencing our lack of separation from one another. That it's not about merging into some group mind. It's not about losing a sense of oneself as an individual. It's more the opposite, becoming fully aware of being an individual through opening up all our connections to all the other individuals, and therefore lighting up the larger body of man or woman, man, woman. We don't have a word for it. I don't like humanity, but the human form. This is anthroposophy, actually. The existence itself is the macrocosm of the human body. And we as individuals, but only as individuals, fully individuate, Jungian term, don't really like it, but in a sense of undividable, where all our parts are connected. You can't take any of them out, or it's like organs. If you take one out, problem, right? The whole thing is working together. I lost my thread there, but yeah, as each of us is as fully aware as individuals, experiencing ourselves through our connections to one another, kind of a paradox, because it's not like we're all becoming the same. We're actually becoming more and more aware of how different we are, but it's not differences in the identity politics sense. God forbid, the opposite. It's the differences of nature where things or everything is complementary, although there may, of course, be conflict, which is reminding me of possibly my last point, although I won't know until I look at the nose. Yeah, well, there's two things. One was about destruction, but I think I'll put that to aside. Now, I think it's the last in my notes anyway, and I do want to open it up to others pretty soon. It's to do with purpose. And well, I mean, first of all, to bring it to you, because I've been in a bit of lecture mode here, so I want to check that a little bit. Not that I'm not enjoying myself. What do you get when you think about your purpose. Because I'm guessing for some of you anyways, it is something you think about maybe quite a lot, even if it's more of a feeling. And well, I mean, maybe I'll just leave that open. But I would say, I would add that if you tune into your sense of purpose, you may find that it's not something that you can always, that you want to bring up into the mind. That once you start trying to give your mind a part to play in defining your purpose, you'll see it's pretty limited. It doesn't really, can't really handle it. That's my experience anyway. You may have a different one. But the main point I wanted to make about purpose was that, again, this occurred to me leading up to this meet, that there are three purposes, three kinds of purpose that I saw. And again, it's this two, when two becomes three, the trouble begins. Maybe that's why Christianity has the Trinity, that you've got to fight fire with fire, I don't know. But first of all, there is, well, I don't know what order I should put them in actually, but I'll start with the bad. We'll get it out of the way as quickly as possible. There's the purpose of separation that I've described here, the anti-life purpose, which has been the focus of much of my work, really. We know there's a lot of people, a lot of agendas out there that seem to be driven by a very dark purpose, to divide, to fragment, to exploit, to conquer, to destroy in a non-positive way. We can't say that they're just acting randomly. There's a design and there's a purpose behind it, but it's anti-life. So in a nutshell, the purpose is towards disembodiment, disassociation, fragmentation, separation, increased separation. We're living in the age of advanced incoherence, you know, balkanization. Pretty soon, as I predicted, we're going to have organ rights to compensate for the fact that every individual has got his own individual rights, and they include being able to alter the body any way it wants. Well, what about the different parts of the body then? Hey, you know, got to include them. They've got their individual voices. Actually, that would be closer to, ironically, if we broke it down that much, we might come full circle and get back to reality. I don't know if that's going to happen though. Anyway, so there's that. Then there's the purpose that's the opposite purpose, which is wholeness. Purpose of regaining wholeness. And I would say that, I mean, that's the purpose. Well, I mean, I would say, but I'm going to retract it in a minute, that that's the purpose of life. It's always to move towards wholeness and balance and inclusion. That word's, of course, become trendy and politically correct, but incorporating everything and finding place for everything. So, yeah, you see that those two are, they're balanced, you know, we've got the good and the bad and the good. But then it occurred to me, well, what about the purpose of wholeness? Because wholeness itself has a purpose. So I would say that actually, our true purpose isn't to regain wholeness, because that's the purpose of a fragment. And that's just the flip side of the drive for fragmentation and separation, that somehow they conspire together, because we're already whole. In some part of us, we're already whole, and we have wholeness itself has a purpose. And the last point, and I think I will wind up, I hope I will, that the purpose of wholeness might include fragmentation and separation, as we've seen in the beginning, was the sword. So we can't judge good and evil with our minds. There, anyway, that's kind of, that wasn't the point I wanted to make, but that's a footnote, really. But the point really is that that wholeness has its own purpose, and we can't know what it is. with our minds. We don't need to know what it is. We are part of wholeness's purpose. We would like to experience wholeness for ourselves, and so then that becomes our purpose. And that's definitely better than the opposite. But it might actually perpetuate the separation if we're constantly seeking wholeness. That can reinforce the illusion that we're not whole, i.e. that we're separate from the whole. So anyway, that's a bit theoretical, but it's hopefully it is based in something that's becoming more experiential that I was hoping I would be able to say more about, articulate, but I don't think I can, except to say, well, being in nature, hanging out in nature, is quite surprisingly informative in this way, because nature, I think it was in the email, it was in all the blog posts or something, nature has, it was actually an email for the men's group a week ago, nature has a purpose. We could see the purpose of nature everywhere. Everything nature does is purposeful, but it doesn't have, you know, gears, cogs turning in some cerebral hemisphere, plans and blueprints and so, I mean, well, that was quite a lot of a talk, wasn't it? And, well, there was two contexts. One was I wanted to deliver a bit of what I promised to deliver, you know, what's wrong with the blood, what went wrong there? What's the source of all our unhappiness and dysfunction? And the other was, well, what are we here to do today? What's happening here? Here today, and what can happen. So, like, we have a purpose here that is part of nature, and possibly, anyway, I just introduced it as a possibility that pertains not to us as individuals, although it would include our individual purposes, it would incorporate them and make use of them, but our purpose as a collective, as an energy field of 10 points of light, one of which is dark, Daniel, not Daniel. Daniel, you're in the darkness. I could ask Daniel, I could have done this ages ago, what I did with John, because maybe it'll work with Daniel. Ask to start the video. All right, so now what I'm going to do now is just have a quick look at my notes, just for my own curiosity, to see if I covered all of it, because I'd be really impressed if I had. Of course, nobody else would. Well, no, actually, I didn't, but that's all right. I'll just read the bits I didn't cover, so it doesn't go on for another half an hour. Symbolic existence. Symbol is half an object, the inner cut off from the outer. So a symbol, the word comes from, it was an object that was broken into two. And so that, and then one person had one half and the other person had the other half. And when they would meet, they could put the halves together and they would know that. Yeah. And so that's how we ended up in a symbolic realm, because we broke apart the inner experience of reality from the outer, and they have to meet in order to escape symbolic existence and enter into reality. But when they meet, when the inner and the outer meet, they merge and become one. So then, guess what? There is no outer. I suppose somebody might say, well, there's no inner, but as I see it, there's no outer. And that would be my last note, which is the most poetic. Where is it? When split between inner and outer is healed, there is no outer reality. We are inside God, whose center is everywhere, but circumference nowhere. You've probably heard that saying, God is a circle, whose center is everywhere, and circumference is nowhere. So if there's no circumference, there's no outside. And I'm sure that many of you had the same experience I had as a kid, which was trying to think about infinity and always hitting this, like, well, okay, so, but if it, or the universe, really, if there's an end, you know, a point where the universe ends, what's on the other side of that point? I would go round and round with that. So yeah, no circumference, no outside, everything is inner. It's remarkable, I know, but it's the only logical deduction. Okay, well, on that note, what I will do is look around the gallery, because I'm always doing that anyway. Still can't see Daniel. Can barely see Adam, because you need to wipe the oil off your camera, Adam, or something. I can maybe see one person that looks like they're keen to speak, but then that person already made it clear that they wanted to take over this meeting at the first possible opportunity. But I'm okay with that. I wouldn't be okay if it was just anyone, because some of you I've never met. But I'm okay with this person. And there's a couple of other people would be fine if they want to take over, but I don't think it will come to that. You know, I don't think I've been that much of a taskmaster or a Captain Bligh to incite mutiny. However, if somebody would like to just dive right in, I'd say now's the time. I don't think I need to say this, but I will say this isn't actually an affinity group. We have the affinity groups, and the affinity groups are very much about sharing, and if they just go anywhere, they go. This was shaped as a transitional space for the affinity groups in the hope that some of you would have a good enough time that you'd want to join the affinity group. So as far as sharing here today, I would request, or at least suggest, that we try and keep to a theme and yeah, see it as that we're working on a mystery, that we're detectives in the parlor, and there's a dead body called humanity, and we want to figure out how it died. And I've given my Hercule Poirot opening speech, and now I'm going to recruit you all, but one of you is the murderer, and we'll leave that part out. We're all guilty. That's in the movie. A terrible movie, terrible point to end on as well, but I think it was in one of the movies. Everybody did it. Yeah, it was an Agatha Christie movie. They all did it. So not such a bad point to end on. We're all in on it. So we're all going to end up busted at the end of this event, if all goes well. So yeah, I will mute, and anyone who would like to jump in, now is the time. And if you don't, well, I'm going to pick on you. It's going to put a log on the fire, but I will hear everything that is said. Well, I spoke too soon. I didn't hear anything. Maybe you were speaking in sign language the whole time while I was gone. Yeah, that's better, Adam. Oh, David Bend is trying to figure out how to be heard. Ah, very good point. Yes. Say I was guilty of actually conspiring to keep you in silence. Let's see. Well, who wants to? I'll figure this out as we go. But who wants to speak? Put your hand up because I can just unmute you. It was David and Adam. Let's start with David. Right. See if you can unmute now, and I'll work it out. You can. Yeah. There you go.
You hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I took a lot of notes, and as I'm looking at them, none of them make sense to me. I have a hard time wrapping my head around these very kind of esoteric, in a way, subject matter, even though this notion of wholeness is something that resonates for me. When you discussed that original separation and how it's kind of rippled through to where we are right now in 2021, the thought occurred to me that I wonder what could have happened differently in that initial differentiation or individuation between, as you described, Adam and Eve. That could have sent a different ripple. That was one thought I had. And that we could have been in a very different place, in a very different outcome than we are where we are today. And also that little story that you told about trying to find something that you needed printed and that you found it through buying, your cat food. Kind of spoke to me in terms of wholeness, that it wasn't really something that you preordained, that it just flowed and naturally, like blood in some sort of way. And I wonder if there's a kind of a relationship between wholeness and the way our blood flows, individually and collectively. That's it.
David, for that, I'm happy that little tiny story that just kind of slipped in there by chance was the thing that stood out for you. It seems very fitting somehow. I managed to work out how to give you the power to unmute, so you now all have that power. If anyone would like to respond to David or just throw their own thing into the mix, then
this is not to respond. This is my reflections on Jason. So the developmental perspective upon these stories like Adam and Eve and Cain and Abel, for me it's been quite helpful to get Steiner's view on human development. Combine this with our own history in an individual lifetime. So, as you may know, in the Waldorf schools, for example, there is a very clear schematic for what happens during each year based on Steiner's understanding of human development. So, the earliest stages, Garden of Eden, Jason mentioned separation from the mother. Well, to me, it's interesting that the anarcho-primitivists have also interpreted this as the loss of the communal egalitarian societies of the Paleolithic and the entrance into the work mentality of civilization. But to take the whole perspective over to today and this notion of individuation, it seems to me that this technologically induced autism and fragmentation of the social life is perhaps a necessary part of this process, as unpleasant and painful as it may be. And that could be often seen as a glib aspect of Steiner. I call it sort of the train timetable of human evolution. So these punctuations, and it all feels a little bit of lacking in purpose, or perhaps the individual's own feeling for it all. But the most useful thing for me here has been thinking in terms of leaving the care of the parent and moving into adulthood. So at least one anthroposophical historian talks about this period as being that, and that once the gods spoke to us, and then the gods became silent. And much as the authority of the parent, at a certain point, becoming less forceful in our consciousness. I'm very tired, so I don't know if any of that was coherent, but some of the reflections.
I was able to follow that. I think others were too.
Yeah, something that's been on my mind for a little bit now, last couple of days. It's like we're talking about, like, where did it all go wrong? And like, it's a, you know, Adam and Eve is a story, right? What makes it wrong is what we're putting out and taking in all the time. And I've had this difficulty with Zoom life, because it's just everyone talking about all these different ways to, like, whatever, short circuit these feedback loops. But from my perspective, and Jason has talked to this, and Oshana too, I just walk into the woods and none of that matters, like none of it, all of it. And it's impossible to relate that to others in an intellectual or language oriented way. Like, which, if you think of the snake in one way is language, or another way for me is the image, or the thing that makes us see God as an image, and that produces all sorts of complexes. Yeah, those were my initial thoughts. And then as to why I am here today, Jason, you were like, from the poster, it's like, all right, y'all, are you on the boat or you're not on the boat? And I'm like, yeah, man, I'm on the boat. So here I am to say that I'm on the boat. I feel like I've said to you, Jason, we're along parallel paths. And I'm currently looking to set down roots and work the land. And I want to keep the other boats in sight.
Thanks, Daniel. Well, I'm very curious to hear what everyone has to say. I'm not planning to respond to anyone unless I can't help myself. I just want to hear what everyone has brought to the party. So don't hold back.
Hi, everyone. Going to what David originally had said, in terms of he wondered whether there could have been other directions that this result could have started off by taking a different path and offered a different result. I think about that quite often, and you can look at it in terms of basically, you know, political society currently, or you can look at it at the back row and look at past ages and what led to the demise of past ages and then the rebirth of new ones. And then with a arguable fresh start, if you will, how did we still steer to the point where we're here in 2021, you know, with our shields up and arms are drawn against the Cain archetype. And I was thinking about what Adam had said in terms of the technological autism. I thought it was an artful term. And I see it firsthand in terms of my work. I've worked with autistic folks, and I can see the power of YouTube and computers on those folks who are genuinely disabled through, you know, actual organic brain damage and things of that nature. Whatever autism actually is, but you see it has a spell hypnotic quality that is frightening in its power, actually. It's astonishing to see, and no one talks about it. And I've tried to bring it up, but I have a position of authority and still I can't get anyone to discuss that aspect with me. But I do think there's something larger to that whole thing, perhaps spiritual in a negative manner. But I also see it in terms of how it's cast a spell over ordinary folks in that, much of my life has been spent in an attempt to be somewhat happy-go-lucky, if you will. And in that way, trying to have the interactions like Jason, you described, where you find that little bit of a tiny little wave, you surf it, and next thing you know, you're finding a new restaurant, you're finding a printer, you've met a new friend. And guess what? We all agree to take our masks off. That is the bonus of a great day lately, right? I seek that out too. I try to find out the first name of my dry cleaner when they change ownership. When I go get my burrito, I'm on a first name basis with the owner of the restaurant. I seek out those things rather than go with the lemmings, if you will, all through the big box store life. Not that I don't get bargains at the big box stores. Who can afford not to? And Daniel, just trying to... You said something that stuck out and I just lost the thread. But I also, in terms of Jason, how you started off, I have been struggling this week in particular because of and I know this is not a sharing group, I'm just trying to mention in terms of an overall theme, which is trying to keep and hold on to moments of joy that make life worth living when everything around you is trying to restrain and stifle, both literally and figuratively, our ability to express and our ability to perceive others' expressions. And so the routine sort of interactions where you can have that spontaneity, that bit of quips or humor, much of that has been just destroyed or taken from us. And I'm really angry about that. And I've been trying to find ways around it. And methods I've used in the past with success, being silly, having the sense of humor of a 12-year-old boy, for example, occasionally exposing myself in that way, none of this shit works. It's as though they're like, okay, all the beta tests in the past, we've examined the results and we figured out all the little workarounds and we're shutting everything down. You can't have a casual interaction with folks. So the reason why I say this is because more and more I'm believing that the Cain and Abel archetype, we're in a battle of good versus evil at this point from what I'm seeing. And I've tried in my life wearing the garments of both sides. I've been bad, I've been good, I've been in between. And what I've come to realize, and I wish I would have realized it sooner in life, was that I feel more comfortable wearing Abel's clothes than I do Cain's. I can disguise myself in Cain's for a while and do a fairly decent job of it. But I think I like that in terms of it as a tactic rather than a lifestyle. So I'm going to stay with the side on Abel. But we're outnumbered and outgunned again. I guess that's probably the script. So I say all this just in the sense of that's me trying to sort out where we are right here, right now, and what is my purpose in this moment, being alive at this time, being that shard from infinity, from the one, both individual, trying to fight off false identities, trying to see what can possibly be derived of goodness from those false identities, because any lie has to have some degree of truth in it for it to be accepted as a lie, right? And that's my battle right now. And my purpose is to figure out my purpose, or at least to further refine and understand it to a more efficient degree, and also to be ready, because we're going to be called upon to exhibit some courage in the near future in one way, shape, or form, each of us in different ways, if we truly stand against what this aromatic force is that's trying to just, once again, prove victorious. And the fact that we're here right now means that so far, that side hasn't really won yet. Otherwise, we wouldn't exist. So here we are, and it's nice to see y'all.
Thanks, Jeff. I noticed, John, that you had unmuted. Was that because was that intentional?
Yes.
All right. Can you hear me? Yes.
Okay. Hi, everybody. I dragged myself in here this morning after a crazy night. I wake up a lot of time after sleeping for 2 hours, 3 hours, and then I can't go back to sleep. So I was. I picked up Jason's book, 16 Maps, and finished a chapter and then laid there again. And then was thinking about coming to this meeting this morning. It's my first time. I've never used Zoom before. So that's kind of why I was spazzing out with the camera there. And something about anticipating this and thinking about my purpose started a kind of an emotional response of joy, of feeling, you know, thank God for Jason and Dave and whatever this is that we're doing. I don't know what it is, but it feels good to me. And as I was kind of like feeling this and having no idea about what my purpose is, thank you, Jason, for saying that the mind can't comprehend it, because I don't. It's just kind of some nebulous thing. I have these talents, and I kind of like do my best with them. And I see that people like, you know, things I do. I make music. So it seems like maybe that's kind of part of it anyway. So I was just laying there, and it was, you said it relates to your purpose, relates to knowing who you are. And so I was like thinking about who I am. And it was like, I got struck by emotional lightning. That's all I can say. And my thoughts were absolutely insane and ridiculous, but I'll just tell everybody anyway. It's when I at that moment that I tried to comprehend who I am, this white light inside my head just exploded. And it was like the voice of God saying, you know, I am here. You are me. And I thought this so ridiculous, you know, this is like insane, you know, crazy people babble on about saying that they're God or they're Jesus or something. And yet I knew it was true. somehow it was like, and so I recovered from this, and it, you know, made me cry. And I was, and the minute that light hit me, it made me cry out in absolute astonishment and in terror and joy all in one thing. And I thought, God, the neighbors are going to hear me. I'm screaming loud. And so, you know, a voice inside, just go somewhere where you can scream. So I went into this remote room in my house, and I put blankets on over myself, and I just let this happen. And it happened over and over again, and I screamed really, really loud. And thank God nobody came to my, you know, it was 4 in the morning, 3 in the morning, nobody heard me, I'd imagine. But as I was having these thoughts, and what is this? It occurred to me that if you don't let the notion in your mind that you are God, crazy as that sounds, then it can't be there. And it was like the flashes would come and go, and I could feel my body just crushing that notion. Like I somehow I couldn't let it be there for very long, and my body would just throw it out again. And I could relax and just be, you know, regular old John again. And yet I knew I had to keep letting that happen. I knew this was important, was happening to me. And I kind of like was telling myself, or whatever this was, that I was going to try to let it keep happening. And it did. And probably for about maybe an hour, this came in and out of my consciousness, you know, these bolts of emotional lightning, of incredible sense of everything being really beautiful, and everything like everything in nature trying to, you know, wake me up or say hello, or, and, you know, that I just couldn't do it. Something inside me was like calloused and resistant, and it wasn't anything that I could have control over. I couldn't like uncallous myself. It was just something maybe I would just have to learn in my normal life to just walk through and let and feel things. So, you know, I just want to tell everybody, I'm glad to be here. This is a special thing. As I see your faces here, I see the kind of people that I need to be around, and I'm not around them in my life, my normal life. I hope this all keeps happening, because as the world gets scarier, I feel that I need contact with people like me. I need to be able to say crazy shit like I just did. And that's about it. That's about it. Thanks for letting me talk. I hope to see you all again. Thank you, Jason.
Thank you, Tom. That was quite a testimony, and I saw quite a few nodding heads. So I'm hoping to hear from those nodding heads, because I think you're not alone here.
Right on.
Hi. Thank you, John. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for that. Well, I've just been feeling, you know, what you had to share, Jason, and absorbing it. And as usual in my world, I'm trying to figure out, okay, what's the model? Who are the characters? How do I share something that will make sense in that framework or that model? And it's a good model. And so much of what John had to share was what was starting to formulate. You know, like I knew that I was going to share, I just didn't know what the right timing was. And John, bless you for helping me emerge in this way and, you know, be integral with myself and what I might have to contribute. In the Mayan K'iche language, their term, if you will, their word for the Kundalini event is Koyopa, and it means lightning in the blood. And these lightning in the blood events that John just described transform or reorient our consciousness, I have found. I have been writing about it and trying to explain it for many, many years now. And I know that Susie and I don't know if she's still here, we have this in common, this event. And also, you know, now very much resonating with what you had to share, John. And I celebrate it. I was beaming when you were talking about it. I don't know if you noticed, but it's like, yes, yes, yes. My whole body says, yes. This is what reorients us, I feel, to go back to Jason's modeling. What happens is we get taken in, back, or we land in the garden again. We land in the garden and it's like we don't know what to do with it, because it's direct understanding, yet our conditioning and all the stories and all the characters, we're supposed to use all of that to describe it so that we can be heard, for one thing, in the world, so we can try and describe this indescribable experience of landing in the garden again and knowing this is who I am. This is like the truth, or this is love. This is all. I'm connected again. I feel the oneness. And then the mind, the intellect, the programming that has come before that attaches to the intellect, if you will. I may be saying that wrong, so don't take offense, please. I have trouble describing this stuff in words. We have to adapt to it. We have to open to the unknown in that way so that we can be informed by something greater, something that is us, but we have forgotten. So those of us who do have these experiences, we end up wandering, you know, in the liminal space. We just, or some people call it purgatory. It's like, and I have an image that really speaks to me, but I don't know how to share it, about what this feels like once you have one of these reorientation events. And how do we communicate? How do we, like, I'm listening to Jason's symbols and, you know, and the serpent, and it all gets very confusing, because when I had the, you know, Kundalini Koyopa major event, it does feel like a frickin' serpent going up your spine and filling you, it is unbearable. We have to, it's terrifying. The thinking mind is just like, and I can't, you know, this does not compute. You know, the body intelligence comes in and says, yeah, we're going to reactivate all this and we're going to make you whole again. And then what do we go through? This whole process of how how do I adapt to this? Do I run from it? Do I engage with it? You know, I've been working on a blog post for about a week now about what I've noticed happens when people are exposed to ecstatic states. The defenses, the triggering, it is unbelievable what I watch, because I'm slowly starting to allow this, you know, this blending and this ecstatic state to, you know, to reveal it to people. And some people will just like, oh my God, this is, yes, thank you. But more people say, what the fuck was that? And it's like, it there's something within that says, no, this is bad. This is wrong. She's making sex sounds, right? She's making it sexual. It's like, fuck, it has nothing to do with human sexuality. It has everything to do with the divine current. Why are we so afraid of that? Because we feel like it's going to annihilate us and take us over, and we lose our identity. And what Jason was speaking to before about, you know, the difference between individuality and identity. And I agree with that. The identity is the outer focus, I think, is what you were saying, Jason. And the individualities, you come to know this if you don't run. If you don't run and, you know, say no to it, and you start to engage with it and dialogue with it. This is what I guide people to do. And so I'm, you know, as you're talking, John, I'm like, oh, good. Now start dialoguing with it. Get to know it. Build a relationship with it. Because if we run, we lose it. If we listen to our thinking mind and our programming, that, oh, this is bad, it's demonic, it's, oh, and I heard you say several times, John, I people are going to think I'm crazy. Oh my God, you, that's the journey that's the hardest, is how do I be this? How do I be in an ecstatic state and hold it and not care what people think? People recoil from this, like, oh, I can't believe you're doing this. Oh my God, the shame, the shame, the shame. So a lot of clues here. A lot of clues, Jason, for, you know, this original shame, this original sin, right? Is that where that comes from? So there's no end to what I could talk about with all of this, but I just wanted to jump in and just say, yay, John, yay, I see you, I see you, and I'm thrilled, and a beautiful testimony and inspiration for where we're going. This is what is available to all of us, and what we do with that precious glimpse of the garden again is everything right now. What are we going to do with that? And if we're not experiencing it and we want to, then start inviting it consciously, because this is what restores us. This is what everything starts to make sense again, when these other pieces of ourself come back together again. And I have defined it as the mother, because that's what it feels like to me, that this rejected piece of our consciousness. You know, it's like, no wonder it's so confusing. No wonder where our minds can be hijacked and twisted and, you know, no wonder. Of course it can, because we're not all here. but we have that opportunity. And it doesn't have to be forever. Like, evolution is this really slow moving thing. It's like, it's whenever you show up and say, I'm ready for this. I have found this to be true. So thanks for letting me talk. Thank you to all of you for what you shared.
What came to me after listening to some of you is regarding wholeness is I'm a fairly long time practitioner of various Buddhist meditations, and the strange thing is one can perform these practices and be in various subtle states and ecstatic experiences, go to sleep, wake up in the next morning and be totally groggy or totally pissed off, or as if no meditation had happened ever before, which is really strange in a way, but speaking to various teachers over the years, I've come to see that it's one thing to have the experience, but if the body isn't really like a vessel for, in lieu of a better word, a container for the experience, to ground it and to keep it stable, it very easily leaves one. In a sense, not that it's gone, but that you really can't see it anymore. It's like what I've experienced in many of these trainings programs is that fairly early on you can glimpse the supreme being, like the face you had before your parents were born, and then it leaves you, and then it's the joke is to just keep on practicing in order for your body and your mind to be more and more relaxed so that this can manifest very naturally inside of you. One thing I've noticed is very easy to go back into distractions and ruminations, and that quiet space can very easily go away. At least apparently go away. And which begs the question, what is it in us that makes us not experience this supreme being all the time? What is it that makes practice necessary in order for the mind and the body to be relaxed enough to apprehend it or be it or whatever you want to call it? It's I think it was also one of the remarks Dave Oshana made in one of the blogs, like someone noticed, like, farming really grounds me, and they said, but what makes farming necessary in order to be grounded? And that's a question that really keeps me busy also. Why is this much practice necessary to continually go back to a practice of meditation? In my instance, it's meditation, in order to keep reconnecting with that ground. Why is that necessary? I could consider it like a sort of ongoing sacrifice. Like it's a bit of sacrificing my time, not knowing whether it will come back, quote unquote, come back or not. But I still find it very odd that, at least for me, some sort of meditation is necessary in order to keep
More deep and profound when you meditate with a group, which I haven't done in quite a while, but it was always spiritual experience was also with a complete stranger when I left one of my friends' places. I just came across his neighbor. We really didn't talk at all, but I just looked into her eyes and said hello, and suddenly I felt all my layers of my identity being peeled away in I can't say it took any time. It was outside of time, and as soon as it was, we passed each other in the street and she was gone. The experience was also totally gone. It was so normal, and it something absolutely not something to grab hold of, that I just couldn't fathom it, and it was gone apparently. So it's like it's for me, it's really strange that this wholeness is so simple, but it's so not apparent that it can really easily leave you. It's really hard to put it into words. It's so paradoxical. It's always there, and yet it seems to leave you always, like a receding horizon. You can get closer to it if you relax and go into nature and meditate. I get the impression, especially if I'm distracted, it's gone easily. So I think I'll leave it at that.
Thanks, Ronald. Quite a gallery we have here today, surprising. Seeing as Eileen mentioned the model that I've shared as having some value, I'm going to add something to it from what Ronald just testified, which is, why do we have to farm? Why do we need to get grounded? I don't know the answer to that, but, or at least that's not what occurred to me, but what occurred to me was that was the punishment that the serpent suffered. He lost his wings, and so then he had to be down to earth, and also Cain was cast out and had to walk the earth. So anyway, I just wanted to add that into the mix. Who's next?
One thing I just want to add to that with the Cain and Abel is that we're all the seed of Cain, like in terms of who made it to the procreative gate. So to be the seed of Abel, it's a matter of affinity and choice. And that could have something to do with practice, Ronald.
Yeah, just putting that out.
Well, I'm wary of adding more because I'm quite humbled by what I've heard today, and I know I have a tendency to analyze and intellectualize, so I just want to be careful about that. But I will respond to what Daniel said, because Jeff was talking about the Cain and Abel and how he can be both and he wants to be Abel now. And I actually made a joke about that to my brother. I can be Cain whenever, no, you can be Cain whenever I'm able. So I can be able when I'm able, but I can also be Cain when I'm able. And we do need to be both. It's in us. It's part of the human makeup, and casting out and rejecting is, we've seen that doesn't work. And Eileen was testifying to that in a way I've never heard Eileen speak before. And although we haven't known each other long, I've heard her speak quite a lot. And for me, I experienced a different side of you today, Eileen. And maybe that's related, but anyway, you were speaking for the serpent in a certain sense, in defense of the serpent, not only, but it was part of what you shared. And I'm tempted to say, again, I don't want to analyze, but that you seem much more grounded than I've heard you before. You didn't seem concerned about being nice. And I think you've had that in the past. You just wanted to say it as you saw it. And that it felt much wholer, like there were two halves coming together, masculine and feminine. And that's where I'm at currently. It's too soon to talk about it. So I'm just seeing it on the outside now, like I did a podcast with Susie and Eileen just yesterday, I think. And I'm becoming more and more aware of wanting to hand over my power. Maybe power isn't the word, but hand over my, hand something over to the feminine. And that is can be literal. There's a literal aspect to that, which is creating a space, and holding a space for literal women to step into their power, and so we can hear. I can hear their voices, because I think that there's a testimony that Eve has, which we heard today, and maybe it's what fucked Adam up. I don't know, because maybe Eve overestimated Adam, but just don't be afraid. Don't be afraid of the serpent. Don't be afraid of awakening. Don't be afraid of Kundalini. Don't be afraid of seeing that you're God. Because that's when the problem begins. And anyway, and without analyzing why that is, why it is that women have a natural connection which doesn't involve derangement. Not that it can't. My mother was deranged. So it isn't really about the sexes. It's about the archetypal poles. But yeah, my experiences of realizing I was God were nowhere near as mild and benign as John's. I mean, I literally prayed for hours to forget that I was God. And sadly, God answered my prayer. And so I returned to my little box of identity. That's how terrifying it was. And yeah, so for me, it does seem as though what Ronald was testifying to there is very true. And it was very overtly manifest for me, because I wasn't just meditating, I was gobbling psychedelics. So obviously I was trying to awaken the Kundalini illegitimately, and my body wasn't prepared for it. The opposite, actually, because the psychedelics destabilize the body even more while giving the mind access to this stuff. So yeah, for me, farming does seem to be necessary, but I'm sure there's a positive outcome of that. We probably need more farmers. So we heard from everybody except the one person who was absolutely serious about that this must be interactive today. It's ironic.
All right, then. Really nice to be here. I'll say a few things. I'm really, one of the reasons, Jason, why I'm required interactive is because I'm learning to speak about my experiences, which is really hard for me, and I've hidden them for so long. And the reason why I reached out to Eileen is because I've heard her speak about them on your podcast and also on her own podcast, because I'm looking for guidance in how to verbalize it. And I I'm shy about speaking about it. I feel a sense of erring on the side of humility or of not expressing it. I don't know why that is, but it's something that I'm trying to just get over and say where I'm at and what's happening. So that's the interactive thing I want to be able to express my perspective. I would say to the Ronald, was it my eyesight is bad, I can't read the names. I think it was Ronald. One of the reasons why I think maybe farming, I've done some gardening, horticulture. One of the reasons the grounding is very necessary is, for me, it's experienced very strongly as electricity that comes in to my body, and it's overwhelming, and like to the body, it feels so much, so intense that, you know, grounding foods and just the body feels, and now my body feels more equipped to take it in and to process it, and it's moving through me a lot more smoothly. But it is like recently in the last couple of weeks, I had the experience of so much energy coming through my body when I was lying in bed. It was a lightning, a lightning rod in the bed, just lying there, just, and it was now more bearable, but I couldn't sleep at all. It was just lying there for a number of hours, feeling like a lightning rod. And when my experience happened, it was in 2009, and I was reading a Jung book at the time. It activated my massive spontaneous Kundalini experience, which was quite destabilizing, but it was massive. And I started to have a lot of the experiences that he was talking about and had referenced while I was reading the book. It was very, yeah, it affected me, really profoundly. But it was helpful, you know, reading the book. And he himself, I think in that same book, described, I think his way of dealing with it was like standing on his head for a number of hours a day just to be able to handle the energy that was going through him. And I can relate to that. I haven't tried it. Well, I've done a bit of headstands and stuff, but sometimes it's just really intense. But now I have learned a lot more to move through it, and I get a lot of things like kriyas, I think they're called, where you, like, and Eileen will know, but like spasming, and yesterday I had a lot. I often get small, subtle ones, even when I'm on Zoom, like involuntary rocking, spasming thing. But so my experience was in 2009. Oh yeah, something else that I will bring in is, around 2016, I came across a book in the library, I guess trying to sort of help me, and, you know, was reading Steiner and stuff. But one of the books that helped me really, it sort of confirmed for me, yes, the path that you think, what you think is happening, how it's happening, exactly how it's going to turn out, the book said, yeah. It was amazing to read. It's a book called The Way to Christ, and it's by Jacob Baum. Don't know how to say it, but you know the Boheme. But anyway, it was so amazing for me to read that book, because I had described it to myself internally that I had this, like, I don't know how long it lasted, but 2-3 months of flooding with light and information and visions and, I guess, lucid dreams and excitement and knowing, tapping into stuff, higher gnosis. It was very destabilizing. And I think, I don't know how I expressed it in the blog the other day, but I'm trying to learn how to express it better. And I did feel like, you know, a bit like, you know, I was a bit feeling a bit like Jesus, but in a destabilized kind of grandiose way. But that within that 2-month period, I got the entire download, like map framework of how the whole thing was going to play out or how it was going to unfold. And that that would take a long time, and that would just, so there was three stages very clearly marked, and a kind of an initial illumination, whatever, and then like, I guess, a purgatory path, a journey that would be of a very kind of spiraling nature. And then there would be an eventual coming out into the light, and it happened very much like that. And I always had a sense of sort of knowing what was coming next. And it was very difficult at the start. The gaps were huge between the phases and as the spiral. And as I gave myself over to it 100%, which I really did, I put everything to one side, having a partner, a boyfriend, having friendships, having a job, having money, having anything, a house was the thing that I kind of kept and was very important to me. You know, a nice safe space to just be with it. And I did other things. I didn't just sit in the house for 12 years and not do anything. I did live, but it was the main thing, just to get to let the unfolding happen and to accommodate it. And that involved all sorts of different things at different stages. But yeah, and I feel quite, you know, that I'm kind of nearing the end of the second stage, and I can feel the garden. I'm in the garden and I feel like I know where I am, and I recognize it, and it makes, you know, things make sense to me, and it's a really good feeling. And I did mention this, I think, before, that one of the things that really kicked in, which was quite confirming or helpful or maybe secured me a lot in the process, was and then so much of it is physiological for me, as well as emotional and integrative and all that, but it's actually physical. The body is being purified, it's everything is being worked over, and a lot of pain and uncomfortable, but things that as the energy is kind of blasting out the blocks and getting you to work on different bits and pieces. But I noticed, I think, in the last couple of years, I think it's called pineal drip or whatever. And like the soft palate in my mouth, I noticed that it sort of changed the shape and the structure a little bit changed. And it's, I guess, kind of like more like a vaulted ceiling. And, but anyway, that started to happen quite subtly, very small, and then it increased, but it really helped with my overall health, and it acted as a kind of another confirmational, if I felt lost or like Ronald said, if it goes away or if I felt a bit off track, and then it would just, yes, no, you're okay, no need to worry, you're going in the right, and it's had a profound effect on my health. It's as well, I think, really, yeah, it's just been very smooth, and it's like a bit like ambrosia like, and it's got a hit off it. It's a good thing, you know, it's but yeah, so I'm just trying to share my story a bit and learn how to speak about it without kind of hedging it or fudging it or kind of holding back or, well, yeah. So I'll leave it there, but so nice to hear everyone. And Jeff, I'd really love to see your beautiful cat again, if he's there. But thanks everyone. And thanks Jason for inviting me to speak.
Is that your cat, Jeff, that you were stroking?
I guess it better be. Yeah, he's...
He's hidden. Yeah. It's like you were torturing Susie. Like, he's here, but you can't see him.
He's deeply in his nap.
No, just one time when it was a Dave event and you were giving a kind of a you know, you're laying out your address, and it was just so lovely the way the cat was beside you and he was looking at you, and it was very, you know, I was really struck by the relationship between you and a beautiful cat.
So. That's very sweet of you to say, Susie.
I wish I had it on video. It was really like something in a film. It was really affecting.
He's a special boy. He and his sister we rescued from behind our garage. My wife had been, I'd given her a camera for her birthday, I guess, back 2012 or so. And she was experimenting with photography, and we have feral cats. There is a point to this story. I'm gonna make one, believe it or not. Aside from responding to Susie, of course. So she had been taking the photographs, stray cats. We have a bunch around, all from the same line, all tuxedo cats, the black and white ones, with a few pure black ones, an occasional tiger. So one day, my wife said, you know, actually, I'm able to get really close to the kittens because the mom hasn't been around. And so we didn't think much of that. But then this happened over the next couple of days, and we noticed that the mom wasn't around anymore. So one morning I was doing dishes and our kitchen window faces to the backyard, and my garage is off to the right in the rear of the yard. And next thing I look down and I see two black cats, which, again, these are all tuxedos I was talking about, but two pure black cats are walking away with one of the kittens in its mouth, and it's just trotting away. And I'm thinking to myself, because I'm ignorant of such things at the time, especially, oh, how nice. I guess they're just moving the cats to a different home, just like, you know, they're just relocating. So finish the dishes, don't think another thing of it, and come back later to dry the dishes. Now, it's a important detail, it's meaningless to you guys, but it's rare that I both wash and dry, at least particularly at that time. So I'm back at the same sink in the same view, and all of a sudden I see the cats again with a different one, again in the mouth, walking along. And I'm like, wait a second, something's going on here. So I called my wife. I'm like, I think we got to check on that litter. And there was just two left out of the original five. Their names are Frog and Toad. They're named after two characters from children's books. My wife works in elementary education. So of course it was like, can we keep them? And I said, well, sure, you know what, I'll go with the bit, ride the wave. So I reached out to grab them. And it's funny that it struck me at that moment, I felt as though that scene from The Matrix, I guess, where Neo's having that hand extended to him when he's in the pod and he's being reached out and pulled from it. I had that same feeling that the kittens were both like, oh my God, I'm going to be pulled, you know, from safety from these evil black cats, and then this guy's going to save me. So we got them, and they were just tiny. We had to bottle feed them. We didn't know anything. Like the first day, I put them in a basket and took them to the local store because we had to buy a washer and dryer. So I'm like, get used to it, kids. This is the way life's going to be if you stick with us. A lot of errands. We bottle fed them, and now they're ginormous. Toad is, he's a big boy. But there's always been a special connection, particularly with him and me, that is, I've had cats before, I've had pets before, but he and I just have a connection that is just, I don't know if it's due to changes that I've experienced in terms of becoming more aware of myself and how I have completely shifted in terms of how I see the world, how I allow the world to affect me, how I try to fine-tune my energy within the world and how it relates to others. And being more whole, gestalt, allowing all that, allowing the Cain and the Abel and everything else to be in there without having this artificial or subjective morality ascribed to, oh, that's bad, so reject it. In other words, go with the bit. Let experience it, feel it, and then dwell on it, meditate on it, like you were saying, Ronald. And then afterwards, see where it ends up. And that has, my relationship with my cat has been a bit of a symbolic microcosm of that experience, in that sometimes he does things that really piss me off, like when he tears apart our furniture. His sister, perfect little princess, doesn't scratch anything improperly. Him, when he's mad at me or wants something from me, he's like, I want your fucking attention right now. And I have to restrain the impulse to kill him, because furniture costs money. I keep explaining to him and he doesn't get it. And I still have to love him even after all that. And that is, again, just another small shard of, you know, not everyone chooses to live life like that, is what I see, is when I go out there and try to interact with people. People don't think about these things in that sort of way, in terms of that depth, and not coming at it from a point of view of arrogance, but coming at it from a point of view of, I've heard that that's sort of like the expression of in Jesus, with live life and live it more abundantly. And by living more abundantly, take those finite amount of moments that we have and try to fully get around them and over them and through them and within it, and encompass yourself within it. And so it's not about getting more of something, it's experience it more fully and being a part of it more fully. And that's, again, to wrap it up, Susie, what I think Toad and I tend to try to get towards each other.
It's very obvious from the connection. I could really, really see it. So I'm going to get a cat and have that. Thanks.
John.
Yeah, you heard me. Getting ready to talk.
I saw you. I was going to ask you something, but then I saw you were getting ready to talk. So,
well, sure, certainly, ask me some.
No, well, go ahead.
I just wanted to say, Susie, I certainly related to what you say. The difficulty of speaking about you know, strange things, strange experiences, you know, how difficult that can be, and it's very powerful that I've learned. In my experience, to be able to say these things with live people. You know, it's one thing to be in a room with a therapist, and I've certainly done that, but to have faces there looking at you and face that, that difficulty, that fear, that embarrassment, or whatever you're feeling, that takes a lot of guts. And the more you do it, the better you get at it, and the less kind of the more comfortable I've noticed that I feel in my skin, having the courage to do that. So well done, Susie. Keep doing it. Go ahead there, Jason.
You did it too, John. So you're patting yourself on the back there too, I think. Giving yourself more support.
Somebody got to do it.
I think it was in your recount, but I wasn't sure of the chronology. When did this experience happen to you that you just described earlier?
Last night.
Last night. Well, I'm interested in how and why it happened, and because I want it. I want it for all of us. And I think that it's possible to invite it, as Eileen said. And, well, I mean, one of the things that has come up here is that we don't get any support for this kind of possibility. I mean, to even think it is either just crazy or it's a sin. Never mind to invite it, and never mind to experience it. So even just at that level, in terms of supporting one another's perspectives, and being able to reality check, yeah, no, there is something happening here. I think it's helpful. And I think that's just the surface level. I'm a bit divided right now because somewhere I'm interested in going with that, with John and with all of you, maybe, or maybe I've said it all, I don't know. But the other thing I'm wondering about is something that Adam shared in my email. Now, Adam didn't respond to the announcement about this or to any of the emails or anything. It's just that Adam contacted me for another reason a couple of hours ago. And he mentioned a couple of things, and one thing led to another. And anyway, he's here. And one of the things that Adam mentioned was something that happened to him last night or the night before, I forget. But it was a difficult experience. So I don't want to put Adam on the spot. And maybe I am already, even by saying as much as I have. But so I have to see it through now. Is it something that you would want to talk about, Adam, or you would feel ready to talk about, or is it too fresh, would you say?
Actually, I was preparing to say something just as John was speaking. So, yeah, Susie was talking about the destabilizing quality of some of, or many of her experiences. And, well, that was certainly the case for me yesterday, in that the floodgates really opened into what I would call the perspective of the accuser. And, so, let's see, I have chronic fatigue. My physical condition is very unstable anyway, from day to day. And I was very tired. I hadn't prepared food. I made a bad decision. I had indigestion. I was, you know, just compounding things. And then I thought, right, well, I have this CBD, cannabinoid oil, which in the past I've used to help me get to sleep. I just wanted to shut down and rest, but I was overstimulated. But I hadn't had any recently, just got some more from a friend, and it was a bigger bottle size, and I just took far too much, basically. And yeah, what followed was being awake the whole night and having some quite strong tremors in my body. Basically, the thing I've noticed, I have a history with cannabis from my teenage years, and I stopped using it for a long period of time, and then occasionally gone back into it. And I've noticed that my state of dissociation from my body is often affected by the use of cannabis. As in, I sometimes say to people, I remember that I have a body. And I'm suddenly inclined to stretch and move it in ways that I don't tend to do a lot of the time. So I feel as though what may have happened there is that the floodgates were open to a lot of things that had been held but not received. So the most strong aspect of it was paranoia. You know, notions of being under attack, you know, wondering if this was some kind of psychic attack. And, you know, and then if we're talking about entities, well, what are we talking about? I mean, are they internal and external simultaneously? And of course, I at that point, when I was able to get myself up. Oh, I also have a weighted blanket, so I was experimenting with that to see how that affected the tremors, because they were quite strong. And it did seem to help gradually. But it was, you know, rather than these ecstatic kind of expansive states, I guess it's the opposite. Steiner talks about Rosicrucian initiation. They took the initiates to the mountaintop to experience this expansive state, but they also took them into a cave to experience the opposite of being kind of limited and feeling oneself internally. So that was very much what I was feeling. Like I had to just hold on to my center and hold on to a sense of goodness, whilst all this sort of red in tooth and claw kind of consciousness was passing through me, and it felt like perhaps a lot of collective things connected to the uncertainty at the moment, and perhaps also historical things, because I've been drawn to reading about World War II atrocities in the area which I live in, Lithuania. And somehow all these things just compounded. So the point of view of the accuser, the less pleasant aspects of our human condition, and they were all somehow present in me. Then I got up and I used all the incense I had in my apartment, started doing some kind of qigong, and took a shower, hot and cold water, then went outside barefoot, and basically for the whole of today I've been coming to my senses. It's only actually now when I'm being in your company actually seems to have been helping me drop out of it, because I as it happens, all the people I would go to for support aren't available today to be physically present. So that's, well, reinforces how separated we are and the way we live. So, that was it, yes. And there's an anthroposophical doctor, veterinarian actually, and a healer called Ari Torreson, and he speaks about translocation in healing, in that he has clairvoyance, or he claims, and he says that in many cases what happens with healing is that there is an entity attached to somebody with illness, and the healer removes this entity from that person, but that entity can then simply go on to attach to some other person. And Ari Thorsen's perspective is that it is our duty in this time to understand that these entities themselves have a potential evolution and a potential transformation. So I was trying to apply that understanding. You know, I was actually pendulating, because I was inviting whatever might be there to transform, but I also noticed unconsciously that my sort of mantra was changing from inviting to commanding. So that was interesting. But my intellect had some idea, or perhaps my heart had some idea, but also on a more instinctive level, there was a desire to simply be rid of this. And I've been going to various healers and asking their perspective on this. And they don't always seem to quite understand the significance of what I'm asking. So yes, lightning rod, felt like a lightning rod. And I suppose I feel I need to pay a lot more attention now to why this dissociation state, which then leads to such an extreme opposite, why it is, and what I can do with it. So I think I'll leave it at that. But yeah, thank you everyone for listening. And,
Thanks, Adam, for sharing. We've completed a spectrum. And John and Adam at two ends of a spectrum in terms of awakening experiences. I don't know if you know, Adam, I had chronic fatigue syndrome for 20 years. Did you know? Yeah. And I mean, I'm curious to ask more, but perhaps here isn't the place. Well, perhaps it is, I don't know, but I actually had a resurgence of the symptoms today, because it's pretty unusual for me to feel what I call the Grinch, at least in a way that is the way it used to be, which is very, very oppressive. And it came on while I was doing the Dave Energy Work meeting, which I signed up for after talking to some of the guys who went to the last one. Even though I know the Dave Energy Work, and so it wasn't a case of needing to learn it, but I decided it would probably be a good idea to do it, because I would be connecting to other people while they were doing it. So I would be in the field for cleansing, energy cleansing field. And perhaps that was why, that pretty much as soon as I joined the Zoom call, I started to feel heavily Grinched. And even just for the beginning part, which is just shaking off and patting, just very simple stuff, which, you know, I've done on a daily basis in the past, but I haven't done it for some months recently. So I think it was partly related to something that's been building up for me in the past few days, which is an increased level of despair. But I think it was also, or perhaps more to do with entering this sphere where it was a collective cleansing going on, so I was able to go deeper. I was unable not to go deeper into, well, it's this thing in the blood, isn't it? It's something in the blood. And the whole nervous system. Anyway, by the end of the session, I felt okay. But during it, and even before, as I say, I've been feeling quite a bit of despair recently, and I've been observing it. I've been somewhat curious about it in a way that I haven't been in the past. In the past, if I felt despair, then I identified with it, because I have an identity that was largely configured with despair. My mother was a melancholic alcoholic. My father was a melancholic alcoholic. So, yeah, despair. My brother and my brother-in-law self-destroyed on heroin. So, yeah, it runs in my ancestral line. Despair runs very deep. And you know, I liked a lot of artists like Nick Cave and Leonard Cohen, who made a career out of, yeah, transmuting despair into hit records. Anyway, the identity, yeah. So in the past, if I feel despair, it was very easy to just glom onto that and, okay, yeah, this is who I am, because then I'm trapped in it. I think it, I mean, I wasn't intentionally relating to what Adam shared, but I think it does relate to the accuser, although I'm not entirely sure how Adam meant that, because it has some deep esoteric meaning, the accuser, but certainly that feeling of just being bad and being wrong and being polluted and being trapped in this dark place. I spent many, many years, decades really, in that, coming and going, and when I was in it deep, it was truly, truly terrible. Truly terrible. So what John recounted as screaming into his pillow, I was doing, but I wasn't experiencing I am God, I was experiencing I am Satan. And screaming from pain, not fear, although fear and pain, despair. Anyway, I don't want to linger on this too much. It's not a cheerful subject by definition, but I was just juxtaposing how it used to be with today, with recently. I'm kind of curiously observing this despair, this state of despair, and how it's still with me. And I don't understand it now, which I mean is a good thing. I don't believe it. I'm like, come on. Look around. You have close to a perfect life as anyone you know. What the hell? You can't possibly complain, and you can't accuse yourself of anything, and you can't feel guilty about anything except not getting enlightened. That's about it now. I'm such a loser. I haven't got enlightened. So it's just there more as a physical state, I'd say, although without being fully Grinched until I was today. Well, I wasn't feeling bad health. It was just, what is this? Lack of purpose. And I'd say it pertains to what I was trying to articulate about handing something over to the feminine, the soul, the what I see as the passive principle, but it's the original. Well, I don't know. Don't want to analyze it, but it's not really passive. It just seems it to my mind. It's the true, the deeper purpose of existence, the creative. So handing that over while my intellectual ego mind is, this is death. It's seeing its death is imminent. That's how I understand it, and that's good news. So I can't feel bad about feeling bad, but I still feel bad. Happy ending. Although part of this is a bit of a qualifier, when I joined this meet, I was all hot to trot and raring to go and had lots to say and full of energy and quite cheerful. And I seem like quite a happy person. I say that as a qualifier because there might have been a bit of compensatory, I can be in my intellect, I can be the guy in charge again. So that's a disclaimer when you listen to the recording, or if you already had experiences. That's just adding that in because I'm always trying to be as transparent as possible. The real thing I wanted to just mention, underline, was this spectrum. The spectrum of awakening, because it isn't just Eve knows that the serpent's fine, and if you don't fear him, it's going to be no problem. Eve was naive too, and Adam, when she overestimated Adam, that was a mistake Eve made. Adam was going to contract and go into fear, and there is, different bodies, different strokes, different folks, whether it's got to do with the female body that has a womb and the male body that doesn't, I don't know. But for some of us, awakening, it's not just a mind fear that, you can just let go of that. It's bodily, it could be bodily, very, very painful. Very, very destabilizing. It can really feel like death. Probably because of original trauma. When the system originally shut down and then it starts waking up, it starts feeling all the pain again that caused it to shut down. So then the spectrum of Adam's experience and John's experience, and then over here, it's a much bigger spectrum, isn't it? Well, Eileen, I think, has had something closer to a fully healthy awakening, and Susie's testified. And then Dave, as a guy, Dave's had the full meal deal, as far as I can see. It's not a spectrum of good and evil. It's a spectrum of awakening, different levels of awakening, and sometimes it feels bad and sometimes it's terrifying. It just seems like paranoia, and I'm the devil and I'm Satan, and I got to do everything to avoid this and shut down. And that's easy to understand. Or John, somewhere in the middle, I'm God, but God forbid that I should actually think or say that because I'll get committed. And also to be that sensitive and open to existence all the time, 24/7, well, that would be kind of destabilizing. Be pretty hard to just carry on shopping in the local supermarket. And, I mean, when I had my experience of being God, one of them, I should say, and this isn't bragging because obviously I rejected it. One of the things I tried to do was read on the plane, And I have this trumpet blast in my head saying, God does not want to read. And I was so horrified that I threw the book down in horror. And that was what it was like. Everything I tried to do, God's voice would blast in my consciousness. Whatever it was. I mean, most of the time God was saying, or I as God was saying, I've lost my mind. And so I was focusing on the thing I'd lost. How can I get it back? And that was what I prayed. I just prayed and prayed, give me my mind back. And eventually I got it back. And boy, am I sorry. But not really, because I mean, it gives me, well, something to testify to. And to finish up, this is a spectrum, and Adam made it here by the skin of his teeth. I mean, it was very serendipitous that Adam's here. Somebody very much in need of some kind of more conventional support. This is what I was going to say with John, is that it's possible that all of us here, the human energy field, supported John for his experience last night, which might sound presumptuous or vain. I was going to joke, we could take a bow, but it's not about us as individuals, and it's not in order to assign credit or anything like that. Just that, wow, this could happen. If we're really there and present for each other energetically, we could all start re-entering the garden. So that had occurred to me, but then Adam says a more conventionalized in a different kind of awakening experience that's kind of all bad, it seems. I mean, it's the psychedelic element just tends to inevitably lead to something that is premature, as opposed to just being too much to handle, as in John's case. Doesn't seem like John had a premature awakening. It's just like, whoa, I wasn't expecting that. And okay, well, it's just put the brakes on a little bit, but hopefully not too much. And John's here today. Maybe it'll happen again tonight and it'll never stop happening. Or maybe it'll happen to somebody else. But hell, I mean, do we really not want it? I guess the answer is yes. We really do not. We really don't want it in some part of us. So good to identify that part and disidentify from it. Say, okay, but you'll be okay, that part that is terrified. And hold the space for it, just as we're as a group holding a space for individuals. We can also, as within, so without, hold the space for the part within ourselves. Because each of us here represents a part of ourselves. You know, I've been where John is, I've been where Adam is. A little trickier with the opposite sex to relate, but still been somewhat where Susie is and Eileen, been where Ronald is. Haven't heard so much from David. Definitely been where Jeff is with his cat. Very easy to see myself with these experiences.
Can I say something in response,
Jason?
This is all really, wonderful exploration of all of it. And I think, my sense of it is, and from my own experience, it was over the course of many years. So, and it is definitely a spectrum in my experiential view. And we touched into this in our podcast conversation, and Susie, if I leave anything out or if you're inspired to say something, please do. But the way that I perceive it now, it's a process, and it's the body adapting. It's learning to understand the language of the body as well, and to reactivate the body as this instrument, that it was designed for. But the way I perceived it in hindsight is that it isn't that, you know, just to, you know, oversimplify, that John had a good experience and Adam had a, you know, a positive and Adam had a negative, or, you know, it is the spectrum. There were times when I would have an event and it would bring up defensiveness and, you know, no, stop, I'm not interested today. I got this shit to do, right? You're getting in the way of my job, which is ludicrous, you know, when you think about it. To me, it was showing me where the gap is between who we think we are, you know, the identity, and who we actually are. And so it can be very painful to realize that the gap is like here, and other times it's less of a gap. And so it feels like, oh, okay, this is a little scary and overwhelming, but wow, this is kind of amazing. And but then you fall back into, I forget who was saying this, you get distracted and you try to fit back in. Here's the other part. You try to fit back into the world, you know, and your family and your friends, but you're changed, you're different. But you still try to put the masks back on and go, no, really, I'm the person you think I am, even though you've just had this explosive, you know, event that changed you and is changing you. It isn't that it just changes you. It is changing you for years and you're adapting to it. And so the way I view it is, even if you're feeling, you know, pain and resistance and fear and all of that, it's just like, to me, it's all something to celebrate because it's movement. It's moving you. And it's okay to dialogue with it. It's okay to say, wow, that was a little overwhelming. I'm engaged and I choose to be engaged with this force that's reminding me of who I actually am. But can we slow down a little bit? Is it possible to slow down a little bit? I really, or, you know, whatever your prayer or intent is, the dialogue is really important, I have found. And then there are times when I'm in an ecstasy and I'm celebrating and tears are pouring down my face. And I'm saying, you know, if I can speak, you know, when you move into some of these states, there's no sense of self. There's only the pure love and ecstasy that you are. But when I'm going into it or when I'm coming out of it, I can express myself and say that, you know, gratitude, just thank you. And I welcome this. I welcome this. I know that, you know, it's a process and I know sometimes it's hard and I know sometimes I get scared, but I welcome this relationship. I welcome this restoration. And understand that I'm not making any references to any existing belief system or body of work. I've left all of that behind. I can only describe what this actually feels like in my inner consciousness and in my body. I can no longer go outside and try and figure it out based on what exists in the world. It can be it can be fun, like with your modeling, Jason, with the, you know, I have learned something. I've learned that I can come back outside and go, yeah, what Jason's saying is, that's a good model. I mean, it might break down at some point, but I can use that frame. But understand, I'm only coming from within and from what I've experienced. And this is one of the most challenging things for me, especially right now, in trying to share it. And as Susie was saying, it's, you know, okay, I'm going to try and explain this. Well, I've been trying to explain it for many years now. And I feel now that it can only be demonstrated. At this phase, it can only be demonstrated. And so I'm moving into that slow but sure, like this need, you know, I mean, it doesn't need to be some special, now we're demonstrating it. It can be, but I've learned so much from this inner intelligence that I've applied. You know, it's a teaching. It starts to teach you. It starts to, I mean, it, as long as you stay engaged, and you can get distracted. You know, I get distracted all the time, but the dialogue is about, boom, I'm here. I choose to engage. I want this. I, you know, you just talk out loud and it starts to, you start to feel the resonance. And this intelligence said, you talked yourself out of this, you can talk yourself back into it. And that's exactly what happens. It's an intelligence, there are events like, oh, I had a Kundalini experience. And as we talked in the podcast talk, it's like, if you don't build an identity around that and you just keep moving with it and engaging with it, it will take you home. And I can't explain that anymore. But what I'm experiencing, the frustration of now, is when I try to teach it, you can see the conditioning of the human mind. It's like, wait, she's not talking in the words we expect to hear. She's not like other teachers. She's like, you know, and so the glaze comes over and they back off and they go to try and find the teacher that will help them stay where they are comfortably, right? So they can stay distracted and they're encouraged to be distracted or disempowered in some way, because, you know, that's just the way it is, right? There are very few people who actually want to engage with this and transform their consciousness. And I really feel that it's just never been more present and more available to us than now. It really is. It's all right here, right now. And it doesn't take much. And you don't need a teacher. You just need to go inside and start the dialogue, is what I have learned and what I was taught by this inner presence. So we should celebrate it. I'm saying not should, but it's something to celebrate, to have an event that is different, that takes you out of what you've been in, looping within. Celebrate that and welcome it. You can change it as much as if you want to engage with it. It will engage back and it will literally move you back to the garden, or, you know, the remembrance of your connection to that garden. But it's not easy. It's definitely not easy. It's a tough road, but as long as you know you can always connect to that presence and receive the inspiration and the guidance that you need, it will blow your mind how available it is to us. And that's not something to believe, that's something to know. And it's a just, it's getting our markers to, you know, go from outer markers to inner markers. Like, oh, I remember what that felt like when that, you know, that peace came over me, or that, or I understood truth and I felt it in my heart. I felt it. So you can regenerate that feeling and you can find those markers again. It's not, it's new each time. It's not something you find from the past. It's something that you regenerate in your body that helps you to go, oh yeah, yes. Oh, I'm back. I'm in it now. I'm in this presence. And this is the guidance that moves us forward. So I guess that was a very long way of saying celebrate it all. If there's movement, celebrate it. Don't be afraid of it. It can change, it can transform, it can grow in the direction that you know that you choose to go. You don't have to stay where you are. We are a spectrum. We can't even imagine how amazing this consciousness is that we can embody. But we can certainly continue to make steps into it and engage with it. It's a living, loving intelligence. I don't call it God. I'm not a fan of the word, because the presence does not fit inside that word God. It can't be named. It can only be felt and adapted to. So I know that it can be challenging, and I know that it can be very, very painful. Because I have experienced the spectrum. It didn't just suddenly go poof and, you know, now I know. It's as Susie was saying too, it is a process. You learn about yourself, you learn about the divine, you learn about the gap between yourself and the divine. It's a constant dialogue. And we need to forgive ourselves, you know? This has been quite a journey. We can't just, you know, maybe some people can instantly be there, but be gentle with yourselves. Very gentle and forgiving of yourself, because all it takes is inviting it and saying, I'm ready. And, or if you've already had an event, okay, I feel ready. I'm here, you know, kind of a thing. So I appreciate what you all had to share. And I will mute again.
I just had to say, Eileen, that was amazing. Start to finish what you just said. So thank you. That was, I wish I could be as articulate and try to describe it, but I certainly completely connected what you're trying to say, and was thinking as you were saying it, how despite things being dire, at least in my lifetime, I've never seen anything quite so dire as what we're facing. Nonetheless, I still feel as though I have the best chance at surviving it and overcoming it because of the connection that you're describing, because I walk with that and I can access it. And it's up to me and it's internal. It's not dependent upon these artificial constructs that have been indoctrinated or attempted to be indoctrinated into me. And you just put it so perfectly. I look forward to the podcast. Let's put it that way.
Well, that was well said, Jeff. Yeah, it was a good podcast. I thought it went very well. I enjoyed myself very much with Susie and Jason.
Were you asking to speak, Adam?
Time and connection to developmental parallels and human culture and individual human being. So I suspect a lot of us are at this point and have been for some time going through the considerations of how we might live our lives if our access to basic resources were to be restricted by some kind of technocratic diktats. And I wonder, what is this? You know, can we see any other parallels? Perhaps this is our catalyst into responsibility as well, in that where we might have been more comfortably living within the warm embrace of the state, then this is perhaps the act of leaving home. I don't know, for many of us, I think it's a very daunting prospect, and especially with the extent to which social life has been broken, understanding that in the past, collaboration was essential for any degree of community self-reliance. How that looks now is very different, so I have no answer for this, really, but what also struck me about this theme of the blood and the sort of tribal mentality, the duty to perpetuate the tribe, and that has perhaps some helpful aspects, but there's also this baked into the cake, this enmity, and I think that's what I've been dwelling on I've actually been going through sites of these atrocities, and I think I've kind of picked up something from there. And just in this part of Europe, that mentality of the nation is still quite alive, unlike in the west of Europe or America, I'd say. So I can feel it in a visceral way. So to some extent, this technocracy, this globalism, whatever you want to call it, is taking us out of that. Is there a new harmonic for any of these? People tend to be progressive or reactionary. Well, we have to go beyond that. And I'm finding a kind of epistemological tribalism developing. It's my most that's what I have some hope for, an epistemology that will enable people to recognize each other and share some value, build something on the basis of that.
Well, again, made to see a spectrum or feel just how wide the spectrum is in terms of what Eileen just shared and then Adam shared more briefly. And Jeff also referred to it. It's a spectrum of God and Satan. Maybe why Eileen doesn't like the word God, because God excludes Satan. And the only God that is worthy of the name would have to include everything, of course, including Satan. But then you get into Gnosticism anyway, so let's just put that all aside, the words. But the what Eileen was testifying to, I felt, the most vital thing there is, the inner guidance. And that the inner guidance isn't equivalent to instincts. It's not even equivalent to intuition. You know, we could combine intuition with instincts and we'd only have a tiny part of what we have access to, what we are. But the reason I said it's not equivalent to instincts, or it's even in a certain sense not compatible with instinct, is that it's not about physical survival. Like that thing that guides us doesn't have physical survival as a priority. Much less physical comfort. However, it does take care of our needs. It's not as though it doesn't care. I mean, if we're not sheltered and protected, we can't live well and eat well and embody it. So I'm not saying these things are irrelevant. That would be absurd. Just the spectrum as I see it is, and when Eileen was saying that this presence is more available to us than ever, there's a complementary polarity. Just as man and woman are complementary, God and Satan are complementary. It gets complex. You got Stein, you got the throne. Anyway, it's right. But I'm just speaking really simply now. The difficulty, including everything that we know or suspect or see or deduce, is going on in the world that Adam is referring to, is complementary to an awakening for individuals, for certain individuals. It's the means to it. Eileen's talked about this also, that as we withdraw our attention from the external goes to hell. And as the external goes to hell, well, the more we realize we have to withdraw our attention from it, because as we feed it, it feeds on us. We're the batteries that maintain the technocratic state. Because it's always been here. The empire never ended. We're just seeing it in its most in a more visible form than ever. So the technology is more literalized. But in terms of us being batteries for an illusory reality that enslaves our souls and keeps Satan on his throne in hell, that's yeah, from the beginning. It's been there from the beginning. So, and I suppose it's always been an opportunity. So there's no point in trying to compare our time now to any other time, but it's hard not to, because of what Adam's saying. It's becoming palpably it's just so more and more apparent that it's almost impossible to live in this world. Right? And the cost of it was always high. And now it's literally your blood and body. Literally you have to give your body over to the state. I mean, the state already owned us, you know, birth, death, burial, owns us from womb to tomb. We just didn't want to see it. Anyway, I don't want to go off on that kind of talk, but just that the spectrum between the material oppression and the darkness that's encroaching and becoming more and more seemingly inescapable, and the light that is getting stronger and brighter. It's a complement, it is a spectrum, and but it's also a duality, but it's a complementary duality, that the darker the darkness, the brighter the light. Like, we know it at the most simple level in terms of visuals, and you know, we just know that the dark brings out the light, but it's very, very difficult to extend some basic principle of perception to, you know, the minutiae of living, because, well, it just is. And that's why I brought up survival, that I don't think it's possible to be aligned with truth now and to be welcoming the presence in our lives and to be willing to be guided, to be guidable by it, and to put our survival first. We have to be willing to die for it. Not because we want to be heroes or martyrs, but because it's the only thing that makes life worth living. Life is not only not worth living without that guidance, without that presence, life is hell. It's literally hell. And I don't know what's going to become of this hell that we've created if we manage to somehow not end up in it. It may still carry on for millions of years, and I don't know that, but I know that even that doesn't matter if we're connected to the source. And actually, there's no hell that can be built that this presence can't be present within. Prison can't be built that air can't get in and out of. The rock, the Holy Spirit, whatever you want to call it, that's obviously more subtle than air. I mean, that's the beauty of it, is that it's unkillable, it's incorruptible, it's can't be trapped or co-opted or controlled. Everything else can. Which is why it's like the eye of the needle. Can't afford to be rich men or camels, whatever it is. We have to be willing to leave everything behind. Everything. And I mean, I say that, and I've said those words many times, and the equivalent words of we have to be willing to get up on the cross and be crucified, and it's not a metaphor. It wasn't for my brother. But even for us, we might not literally have nails through our palms, but still not a metaphor. But yeah, I mean, I say these things, and I'm always aware that I may not be able to live up to these words, but I still have to say them. Well, I don't have to, but they still seem worth saying. Because, well, I'm encouraged, literally, I'm given courage by meeting with souls that see what I see, and I'm also humbled. So I only want to give my best, and if I end up overreaching and exaggerating how much I trust in life, I don't think that's a crime. I think, as Eileen says, if I speak the words, they may actually come back to me and say, "Yes, my son, it's true what you say. Get up on the cross." Oops, I just volunteered, didn't I? I mean, I really feel it. I've been through hell, and I know it's and at any cost is worth staying true to what we know this presence is, at any cost at all. I know that. So we'll just see, and fingers crossed that I've done enough penance not to be treated like Job. But anyway, so it's all up to the word that Eileen doesn't want to use, which I respect.
The only reason I don't want to use it is because it's been hijacked. It's the connotations. But I wanted to speak to, you know, what you were saying about our physical needs and instinct and intuition, and what I feel, the way I describe it is where we remember how to be in harmony again. We remember how to harmonize with our bodies. And we remember how to harmonize in, you know, what you're referring to as the human energy field, and what I often refer to as the universal or divine or source field that we're connected to. And you demonstrated it, I feel, with your, what you thought was just a little story about your cat food and, you know, your little journey to, you know, I have these two things to do. and it just became one thing, right? It was, you didn't have to think about it and plan and strategize it. You were in this harmonic, enough of a harmonic balance with yourself that your needs were met. And that was demonstrated on a very, very small scale, right? I mean, imagine what life is in this harmonic balance. And the other thought I had when you were talking, Jason, was it's like we forgot, we've been in this cycle where we forgot the light. It was like we just got smaller and smaller and smaller inside this thing that we all describe it in a gazillion different ways and different philosophies and a lot of great ways of explaining it. But what if we just, I know evil exists. I've been face to face with it, and it was not pretty. But what if, you know, that thing about, you know, you talked yourself out of it, you can talk yourself back into it. What if we just talk ourselves back into this harmonic way of being, and that it's like a dimensional thing? Like we just, it doesn't have to be a part of our existence. You know, perhaps, and I agree with you, Jason, I have no idea what this is going to look like for those who just, whether unconsciously or consciously, choose to go with hell. And that doesn't matter. I mean, what good does it do to think about that and wonder about that? I'd like to get on with how do I harmonize better with my design, the way I was made to hum with existence. And I don't think you're excluding dark. It's just that my preference and my attention and my actions move towards embodying more of this light that is available to me. Why would I not? If I can, I want to embody this. I want to be this. And I don't know exactly what that looks like, but I believe these conversations are what need to be had now. We need to do this now so that we can help each other walk in this direction. We can't do it by ourselves. There is no, you know, I'm enlightened, bye-bye. We take each other's hands and we go, you know what, here's what I see and know. What are you discovering when you take that inner journey? What's your data? I don't want to hear about the world's data anymore. I don't trust any of it. But I do trust that those of us who are having the courage to go within and to build this relationship, I want to know what your data is and begin these kind of peer-to-peer groups where we can mirror this to each other and strengthen each other. That's what I feel, that's what the inner guidance is showing me. And so I'm saying it out loud, that this is, we're just getting to the exciting part. This is really great stuff. And it's not that, and it's very grounded stuff because I have done my work to be anchored with this. This is not airy-fairy flighty stuff. This is as grounded as it gets. Because the more grounded we are in the earth, the more we can hear what we need to hear and know. It's the earth and the connectedness to that that speaks to us, that creates the resonance, I have found. And you know, I do all the writing that I do and blogging and talking and stuff because I need to hear it out loud. I need to know, because if I say something truthful, my body will go, yes, and resonate and hum. If I say something that's not so true, my body will catch me and go, try again. And, oh, okay, what is it? What is it? What is it? And then I speak it out again. And this is how I do my translating of these energetic messages. It's like the body tells me what's, if I've said this correctly. If I've said it incorrectly, it lets me know. So the body is far more important than we have given it credit for. I think we've just begun to, you know, we're beginning to unravel the power of this instrument that we were given in this reality. And anything is possible, I feel. I don't know how to explain how it's going to work and if there's going to be like this interdimensional or dimensional split, and there's that earth and here's this earth. And I mean, I have tried to say it so many different ways that I finally just come back to, it can't be, there is no language for it. It's an actual experience if you choose to engage with it. And we don't get to know what that looks like in our little, you know, equation that we've adapted to. You know, like it doesn't want to explain things to that level. Just you engage with it, you rise up and meet it. It can only go so far in trying to get your attention, right? So it's that, it's your, it's all coming back to your cat food story, Jason. It's that, it's just that you were humming. And so these things just came together. And I feel that is how it works. And we just expand from there.
Well, at the risk of overanalyzing again, I'd say it's because I was doing something for someone I really love and care about. So that was the energy I was in.
Wanting
food for my good cat and
all
that other stuff. And then it was provided.
True. Yeah.
Serve others and we will be taking care of ourselves.
All right, can I talk? I'm about wore out here. That experience last night gave me one big headache, but I'm so glad I came. I was thinking about just bypassing it today. But this has really been amazing for me, and I'm so glad that I chose to come in. So whether or not this carries on without me, I'm going to have to tell you about this little dream I had after that experience last night, and then I'll be moving on. It just kind of occurred to me as all you were talking about, especially Adam talking about the, you know, seeing what's going on in the world and the fragmentation and all that. So after I fell back asleep, I had this dream where I walked up to this kind of like hillbilly ramshackle rancho with this huge family. And they're kind of beckoning me in. And as I'm walking up, this huge black dog with bad skin comes running out, and they said, don't worry about the big black dog. Y'all just got to talk like this and that dog will leave you alone. And so I said, I hear you there, brother. I'll just talk like this. And the dog just kind of like relaxed and didn't scare me anymore. And he just did his own thing. And so they led me inside the house. It was, you know, brothers and sisters, and I would say 10, 12 kids, and no father but a mother. And the bunch of girls, maybe five girls, all pre-teenage, invited me in the house, and they all jumped on this bed and were right next to a TV that was what they were watching, the Twilight Zone. And I was like, all right, Twilight Zone, you know, I love that show. So I jumped on the bed, and all these girls like jumped on top of me, like I'm in this dog pile of sweet, you know, innocent female, you know, pure love energy, nothing sexual about it at all, except, you know, they were dog piling me. So my hands were like between their thighs and their butts were like up against me. And so it was just like innocent, beautiful human contact in a very pure way, which kind of speaks to my whole feeling of, you know, in my life I've been rejected by women so much that it's just uncanny to a degree. I might even call it a curse. But so I was just feeling this, you know, acceptance and warmth. And then they got off me, and I looked around, and there was the mother was cooking something on the stove, and up on a shelf above the stove, they had a baby that was playing with a spring. Like there was a little bowl or something, kind of like those things that cats can drink out of that has running water. And it was just this bubbling up of a, like a spring. And this baby was like putting its face in there and licking it and splashing. And I thought, God, this baby's going to fall on the stove, you know? And I looked at the mother, and she said, don't worry, the baby's okay. The baby's okay. Not going to fall on the stove. And I just walked up to the baby and watched it play in the water. And I was just this very powerful feeling of everything is okay. Everything is okay. You know, no matter how crazy it is, everything's okay. And that's, and then I woke up. And as I thought about that dream, the big black scary dog, that's like the man, that's the state. And in order to walk past it, you know, when you talk like this and everything's all right, you just be like this, the state, you know, it's in order to swim as a fish and not be, you know, caught or, you know, we can walk amongst the crazy ass world and speak the way they speak, and everybody will relax. And, you know, not that you have to sell out yourself or anything or go against your own inner thing, or it was more like, you know, speak in a way that everybody's familiar with if you're going to speak. And so that's kind of like how I feel in this world now. It's everything will be all right. I just don't have to, you know, like if I get pulled over by cops, I drive fast cars. And so that tends to happen to me. And so in the past, I would kind of just like, you know, be defiant, you know, not in a, in an aggressive way, but just in a silent way, like I know my rights and you're not going to get anything out of me. But I found I've had a better result with the cops if I just said, hey, you know, or hey, man, you know, what's up, officer? Did I get a little fast there? And, you know, I was just speaking their language and they're expecting you to be, you know, someone that appreciates authority, which I absolutely do not. But when you do that, they relax. And the guy ended up just letting me go without a ticket. So it's kind of like, anyway, that's a little dream I had. And I ended up with a really positive feeling. And don't ask me what the baby is. Maybe Jason has a thought about that, the baby and the spring water. But, you know, just that image. And of course, the mother saying, don't worry about it. The baby's all right. She looks like it's in a real fragile place there. And, you know, something bad might happen to the baby, but it's not, that's not the case. So anyway, I'm going to, you know, I woke up and joined everybody here without eating anything. I'm starving. I'm tired. And I got a headache. So I'll thank you for everybody for everything you said. And it's been very positive to hear these things. And I'm looking forward to seeing y'all again.
Thank you, John. I love the dream. Thank you for sharing that as well. Don't, wonderful to meet you.
Don't go just yet, John, because that's
okay.
a great note to end up on, an uninterpreted dream. I'll leave the baby to your interpretation. He's your baby, so you just take good care of it. But I think we should all go our separate ways now. It's been 3 hours. It's been very intense. It's been full on. It's been a remarkable encounter for me. I suspect it has for others too. And although I'm very averse to sentimentality, so don't take this as sentimentality, I think we could just take a moment just to appreciate all of us who've come here, because I can pretty much guarantee that it'll never be these 9 people again, because it never has been in my past. So although I hope that we'll have another event very soon, next Saturday or another Saturday, and let me know if you would like one. I'm pretty sure it won't be all of us who are here today. So just take a moment to really appreciate one another that we've met on our different trails through the infinite, because that's a miracle. And we will stay connected after this ends, just as we were connected before it began. So I wish many Kundalini risings to come. For all of us, we probably only need one each. Don't be afraid of the light. So I don't know if anyone else would have anything to say, or because you're welcome to. But like John, I also been a long day, so I think I'll going to have a cup of tea and a piece of chocolate.
I just wanted to say thank you, Jason, and to everyone here. It really was a nice connection. Although I'm apparently not supposed to be so nice anymore. I'm practicing my unniceness. So, thank you for having the platform and for bringing us all together in this moment, powerful moment.
Like I say, I've been humbled, and that doesn't happen every day. A remarkable group of souls gathered here today. So thank you everyone for showing up, and as I say, let me know, give me any feedback. If you want to be in contact with each other, let me know. Also have a forum, which is like Fight Club. It's a secret forum, but if you're interested, if you're not already there, a few of you don't know about it, let me know, and you're now officially initiated because I've seen your face.
Bye.